We ended last week dealing with some of the biographical information about Moses, and really we got, I believe, to about this point here. We did, I think, briefly talk about that he was raised in Pharaoh's house. We also talked about him being a shepherd. I want to go back and make a correction. I think I mentioned last week, we're not really exactly sure how long he stayed in his mother's house, Jochebed's house. If you look in Acts chapter 7, there is a discourse there by Stephen. And Stephen, of course, goes into a great discussion of Moses and his leadership over Israel and the fact that he tried to lead them out of bondage and back to the promised land. And in that discourse, Stephen makes mention that Moses stayed for 3 months in his mother's house, or actually in his father's house is the way Acts reads. But so it's very likely or very possible that he only stayed for a few months, I guess probably until he was weaned. But 3 months really isn't enough time really to wean somebody. So it could be a descriptive analogy or maybe a use by Stephen to mean a short period of time by saying 3 months. Yeah, now.
Yeah, so Exodus say his mother hid him for 3 months before she put him in.
I don't think it says 3 months, but I think it just said that she hid him. I'll look real quick, though. And that could be the description, but... Yeah, she hit him for 3 months. You're right. Yeah, that's verse 2 of chapter 2. So that could be what Stephen is talking about. We're not really exactly sure, but he does mention that he stayed in the house 3 months under the care of his mother, or in his father's house. And so we're not really sure when he came back and was being nursed by Jochebed exactly how long possibly he stayed. But I just want to bring that to your attention. It's one of those ambiguous situations where we don't know the time frame, a specific time frame there. I don't think 3 months is enough to wean him necessarily. And so I would venture to say that he was probably there longer than 3 months. So what Stephen was referring to could be the 3 months, I think, Nell, that you were speaking about. Or it could just be a representative saying a short amount of time. You know, he only stayed there 3 months. You know, more of an exaggeration or a hyperbole instead of being an exact period of time. So. But that was dealing with some stuff we talked about last week. I want to move on. He grew up in Pharaoh's house. He was a shepherd. We discussed that in Exodus chapter 3, verse 1. He actually was shepherding Jethro's herd or sheep, his flock of sheep. And that's when, of course, the burning bush came about. We'll talk about that this week. And finally, we ended, I think, last week before we got to him being buried by God in the wilderness. And I want to spend a little bit of time, if I can, on this fact of Moses' life before we dive into the Hebrew writers' accolades for his faithful service, because I think this is a very important part of Moses' life. I think it teaches us many lessons about being faithful, that we don't always receive every blessing because we're faithful. And in this case, Moses never was able to set foot into the promised land. And that's because of his own actions as you read the scriptures. But Moses was actually buried by God. And I think that is a very neat thing to think about. And if you look over in Deuteronomy chapter 34, of course, this is the very last chapter of Deuteronomy. Before this situation, before chapter 34 actually occurred, God had taken Moses up on the mountain. I'll talk about that in just a second, to see the promised land. He was never able to actually set foot in it. But chapter 34 and verse 6, and we'll go to verse 5 because it helps us see more of the context of the word he in verse 6. But it says in verse 5, "So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab according to the word of the Lord. And he buried him in the valley of the land of Moab opposite Beth-Peor. But no man knows his burial place to this day." Moses, when he died, was not buried by his family. He was not buried by his friends. He was buried by God. And I think that expression of love and that expression of dedication is something that I think would cause us all to kind of stand in awe of this circumstance and this situation. Can you imagine being buried by God? He's actually the one who stood there at your grave, who probably wept, who was saddened at the departure that you had. Now, of course, Moses, in this case, we know that he went on to be with the bosom of God. We see him several times being seen, especially if you look at the Transfiguration in the New Testament. Moses is always seen as someone that's being faithful, and that is there in the place of comfort, and as someone that has received his reward for his service. But imagine at this point in time, God and Moses had been so personal, so close together, that God was the one who buried him. If you read throughout, I think the whole story, and we don't have time, that we could do a whole quarter on Moses. You could do a whole quarter study on him and his leadership and the people, children of Israel's wanderings. I mean, many of us have studied him probably in Bible class after Bible class. But you see there a very close-knit relationship between Moses and God. In fact, Moses is probably the one who saw the form of God more than any other person in all of history. Giving the Ten Commandments. You see him seeing God in the burning bush. You see him talking to God through the pillars of fire and the pillar that followed them and led them by day. God's presence was there, and so this personal relationship had grown throughout all these years. And so when Moses died at 120 years of age, he had developed and built such a close relationship with God that it was God who buried him. And so I think that's a very interesting factoid about Moses and his biographical information, is the fact that he did die. He did not live forever. He wasn't taken up into heaven like Elijah. But yet we see in this circumstance, in this situation, he was buried by God. He had done and fulfilled all those things which God had said. The question also becomes, why didn't he go into the promised land? Many of us know the story, but I want to quickly go over the story. The story kind of goes back to Numbers chapter 20. Numbers chapter 20, if you will remember, in our discussion about Miriam, shortly before this situation with Moses and God and striking the rock, Miriam had been cursed with leprosy for speaking out against Moses. Her and Aaron had kind of stood up and said, hey, Moses isn't the only one who God has spoken to there in the first part of chapter 19, I'm sorry, there. And we see the, is it 19? I'm sorry, I'm getting those chapters mixed up. Several chapters, but it's actually the chapter 16. Chapter 20, though, leads us to the death of Miriam. That's where we talked about chapter 20 before. Miriam had just died. And in chapter 20, you see the events preceding and leading up to this confrontation with the waters there at Meribah is that Miriam had passed away. Miriam had died. The people of Israel began speaking and grumbling and complaining against God as they normally did, it seemed like, as they traveled toward Canaan land. And in chapter 20, after Miriam had died, there was no water for the congregation, it says. And they grumbled, they complained, they contended with Moses, is what my version says in verse 3, and said, if only we had perished when our brothers perished before the Lord. Why have you brought the Lord's assembly into this wilderness for us and our beasts to die here? Of course, here we go, this self-deprecating, grumbling, griping, complaining that, hey, woe is me. They had this pity party that continually seemed to follow them throughout all their wanderings in the wilderness, going toward Canaan land. We all know ultimately it caused them to have more years of wandering because they had failed to learn their lessons over that time period. But at this point, they became thirsty. Now, before previously, they had Moses had been commanded to get water from a rock. And here again, the Lord does the same thing. And if you look in chapter 20, in verse 8, the Lord spoke to Moses and said, take the rod, and you and your brother Aaron assemble the congregation, and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it may yield its water. You shall thus bring forth water for them out of the rock, and let the congregation and their beasts drink. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, just as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock, and he said to them, listen now, you rebels, shall we bring forth water from you out of this rock? Then Moses lifted up his hand, struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came forth abundantly, and the congregation and their beasts drank. And then verse 12, this is the probably the saddest verse that I think that I've ever read with regard and with respect to the life of Moses and Aaron, because all that they had done and all they did for God. It says, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, therefore you shall not bring the assembly into the land which I have given them. They were condemned to die in the wilderness before they reached Canaan. And we see later in the chapter 20, actually, is when Aaron had died. Aaron passed away in chapter 20 of Numbers. Moses doesn't die for many years afterwards, though. He does outlive his brother by a long shot, I believe. I'm trying to think of the years, but I don't think it says how old Aaron was when he died, at least not in this passage. But Moses does outlive Aaron, but for the same reason that Aaron died in chapter 20 is the same reason why over in Deuteronomy chapter 34 and verse 6 is the same reason that Moses died. And the reason was it stems right back here to this time at the Meribah where water was to be given by the people. Now, why would God have commanded him or sentenced him here pretty much to death? Well, the bottom line is because he didn't show his true belief in God. He didn't obey God as God had commanded him. So you see this one incident caused Moses to stumble and falter and not be able to enter into the blessed promised land. There's a couple reasons why I think in this passage why Moses is condemned. And if you want, this is my, God didn't necessarily spell it out. What he said right there is probably the gist of what we understand. They didn't believe in him. So what do you mean they didn't believe? Of course, we know they believed in God. Okay, we understand and we don't have any doubt in our mind that Moses and Aaron believed in God. So what does it mean here that they didn't believe? Well, for one thing, they didn't properly obey him. The Lord told them to speak to the rock. What did Moses do? He struck the rock twice. Now, previously, before, Moses had struck the rock. And that's actually what God had commanded him to do, is to strike the rock. This situation, that's not what God told him to do. And so in this circumstance here at Meribah, Moses and Aaron disobeyed God. Secondly, I think if you look at the passage of Scripture here, the credit given to this miraculous event isn't totally given to God. And I think that's one thing that I have underlined and circled in my Bible. If you look there in verse 10, when it says what they did, they gathered the assembly there. They said to them, "Listen now, you rebels," and here's the word I circled, shall we bring forth water for you out of the rock. It may have been a slight of the tongue. It may have been out of anger and frustration. But here what we see is Moses is grouping himself with giving them the blessings from God. Is it major? Maybe not. Maybe not. But I think it shows their mentality, their I wouldn't say arrogance, because I would never classify, I don't think Moses as being arrogant whatsoever. But maybe in the heat of the moment here, he forgot who to give proper tribute to. You know, if you look back in the past, Moses never really faltered in giving credit to whom credit was due. And in those situations, it was always God. That God was the one who brought them out of Egypt. And God was the one who blessed them with manna. You know, it was God who did these things. And somehow, some way in this passage of Scripture here, they group themselves in with giving this blessing to the people. And I think in some ways it shows not necessarily a lack of belief, but maybe a misplaced belief in this circumstance, in this situation, where Moses necessarily did not do what God had wanted to do. And then on the other flip side, he did not give proper credit to whom credit was due. That's my thoughts. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts on that circumstance. On this little story here, this little snippet from Moses' life. Feel free to give any comments that you got. Anything? Yeah.
Maybe God buried Moses because if the children had, they would have probably taken him into Canaan like
Joseph, yeah. The question is, do you think that God buried Moses because they would have taken him actually into Canaan and probably buried him? Possibly. I thought about that as well. I mean, God, he was going to make sure that his sentence was carried out. If you really want to, you know, he's the righteous judge. You know, Jehovah God was not going to let anybody thwart what he had commanded or what he has said. And that really goes for this situation too. He told Moses, you will not go into the promised land. Of course, you can always debate and argue if he's dead, did he really go into the promised land? His body there. Joseph wanted to go back to the land and be there. With people. They were no longer living. But I don't know, possibly. I also kind of think that you think about Moses and all he did, and I kind of think compared to our country, to our great leaders. You know, you think about historically our leaders, and they've set up some huge memorial, or they are kind of elevated to almost the deity of a people. I'm not saying we necessarily did that, but if you ever go to D.C., you know exactly what I'm talking about. Everywhere you turn, you got either a building or some monument or statue or some, you know, huge edifice that has the name of one of our great national leaders. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with paying tribute and remembering our leaders. But in this case, I don't think God necessarily wanted Moses' legacy to be some monument or something that was set up and you know, come back and either worshiped or come back and being exalted. I think he wanted Moses' proper place to be much lesser known. And I think that's very interesting that the Bible says over in Deuteronomy 34 that nobody knows to this day where his burial place is. Why? Well, because God didn't want us to know where it is. If he would have known, if he wanted to tell us where it was, he would have told us. But in some ways, it's almost like he wanted to keep it secretive, maybe to honor him. You know, that's some way, one way to honor him, I think, in some way or form or fashion. But I think it could be, too. I agree with you that it could be that he did not want him to be taken into the land after he said, you will never enter it. So, David. Oh, yeah. Yeah, David's point is that we do know he ended up in a much better place. Leaders can fall. We can mess up. We can sin. We can do horrible, horrible things. I mean, think about this. You are being disgraced and by God himself, looking down and saying, you will die. You will not go into the land. You know, to Moses, it was probably the sentence of death that, you know, I'm not sure dying was the ultimate thing. It was probably not going into the land that he knew that he was going for. He had striven for so many years. He ended up, you know, for 40 years wandering around the wilderness with these people going toward this land. And then he ultimately would not be able to see it. And I think that it was not necessarily dying, but it was the sentence pronounced by God that he was not going to be going into the land. He would be prohibited from seeing that land of milk and honey that I think would probably have killed him. And if you look in the preceding chapters of Deuteronomy chapter 34, you'll see kind of Moses' longing attitude, and God actually allowed him to see the land. And I think that that's a very interesting concept if you look, because he took him up on the mountain before Joshua, I believe, was commissioned. I didn't mark it in my Bible, but I think it's in 32. The end of chapter 32, starting in about verse 44. That's after he got done with his song. If you read the preceding verses, you see kind of the song of Moses here. He came, spoke the words of the song to the hearing of the people. He with Joshua, the son of Nun. After he finished spoken, he said to them, take to heart the words which I'm warning you today, which you shall command your sons and observe carefully, even all the words of this law, for it is not idle word for you. He implores them here, verse 48, the Lord spoke to Moses and said, go up on the mountain. Mount Nebo is where he went. That's in the land of Moab, opposite of Jericho, which we know Jericho is one of the first cities that the Israelites went in and conquered. He said, and look at the land of Canaan, which I'm going to give to the sons of Israel for possession. Then die on the mountain where you ascend and be gathered to your people, as Aaron your brother died on Mount Hor and was gathered to his people. Because you broke faith with me in the midst of the sons of Israel at the waters of Meribah, Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin, because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the sons of Israel. For you shall see the land at a distance, but you shall not go there into the land which I am giving to the sons of Israel. And you go chapter 33 talks about the blessings. He went there. He was able to see there in the first part of chapter 34, all the way it says from, Lord showed him all the land in verse 1. Gilead as far as Dan, all of Naphtali and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh and all the land of Judah as far as the western sea and the Negev and the plain and the valley of Jericho, the city of the palm trees as far as Zoar. And the Lord said, this is the land I'm going to give your people. I'm going to give to that I had sworn to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. And he said, I'm going to give it to your descendants. Here, you can see it with your eyes, but you won't be going there. Kind of bittersweet if you really think about Moses and the end of his life. You know, we don't think great leaders ending their lives like this, but that's exactly how he ended his life. He was exalted by God ultimately. And David, I think that's the best point that you just made is that in the end, we know what happened to Moses. Why? Because in the New Testament, the Transfiguration, there he appears with Elijah to Christ. I mean, you see the leaders, the ultimate ones that we look at as being the most faithful, the ones that have been exalted kind of as being these great men of faith. But yet, if you look back over his life, you see that even in the midst of being faithful, you know, still flawless. And that's why I've always written in the sidelines of my Hebrews chapter 11, faithful but not flawless. Because almost every character you read there, you will see they have flaws. They've had sin. They've had troubles. Most of them overcame those troubles, though, in the stories that we understand and we know the ends of their life, like Moses. We have no doubt that after that happened at Meribah in Numbers 20, Moses didn't falter. He didn't turn his back on God. He didn't throw his hands up in defeat. He didn't give up. No, he remained faithful, continued leading those people of Israel. Even in the times when they whined and they complained and they moaned and groaned against God, it was Moses who stood up to them. And even though he died in the wilderness before he entered into the promised land, I think the fact that he was buried by God speaks volumes as to what kind of a faithful leader this was with respect to him and God. He was faithful to God, and I don't think there's any way to doubt that. And as we look at his life, I think you can see the points that have been made show that he was one of the epitomes of faithfulness in all that he did. Real quickly, it ain't going to be real quickly. We're not going to finish this week, just to let you know. We're going 3 weeks. I'll end this quarter with Moses next week. But I think as you look in Hebrews chapter 11, if you will, with me, what we see is several different statements there made by the Hebrew writer as to the faithfulness of Moses. It doesn't always give us specific, you know, thoughts or concepts as to exactly what the Hebrew writer is saying here. I think we have to read between the lines sometimes, looking at these stories to see exactly why he's being lauded as being faithful. But what we see is that the Hebrew writer shows us that Moses was a faithful man, not just in the way that he was born, not just in the way that he lived and died, but in the way that he led the people of Israel day in and day out as they left Egypt and went toward that promised land of God. We see, first of all, in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 13, verse 23, as we start reading this narrative here about Moses. Moses is lauded in verse 23 because he was born. When he was born, he was hidden for 3 months. Here's the 3 months again now. By his parents, because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. If you look here in the passage in verse 23, this honestly, I think, speaks more about his parents than it does about Moses. Now, I think it gives us a little insight as to who Moses was and where he came from. But honestly, you cannot attribute Moses being hidden to Moses because he was too little to do anything. The hidden aspect of Moses after he was born, of course, is to be attributed to his mother, Jochebed, and his father, Amram. If you look in the passage of Scripture that we have discussed before over in Exodus chapter 1, you kind of see the story of Moses being hidden. I'm not going to rehash that because we've talked about it before. But as we know that when Moses was born, there was an edict that had gone out among all the people of Egypt. And those midwives there who helped try and give birth to the children, they didn't, of course, have a huge childbirthing, you know, hospitals like we have today. You know, it's not like when Marley went to the hospital and we had these huge nurseries and we had all these doctors that were there helping us give birth. That's not how it happened in Egypt. They had midwives that would go around and help the mothers give birth to their children. And that's what happened. Egypt, the Egyptian pharaoh said, hey, whenever you give birth or whenever you help give birth to a son of Israel, you are to kill them. Well, the midwives didn't comply with it. They didn't want to kill the babies. They worked around it. They even gave excuses as to why they're not, because they said, hey, these Israelite women aren't like you Egyptian women. These Israelite women give birth fast, and by the time we get there, it's too late. They didn't want to kill the babies. So at that point, Pharaoh said, okay, soldiers, here we go, Egyptian soldiers, you are to go and kill each boy who is born. If a baby boy is born, you are to make sure and take over killing those babies. Well, that's the edict that had gone out. That's what verse 23 is talking about here, is that Pharaoh established an edict that all children that were boys, that were males, were to be killed. Moses' parents were not scared of the edict. This verse 23, this declaration of faithfulness of Moses, I believe, goes back to his parents. And what we see is that Moses had faithful parents. And in return, I believe that helped establish a foundation for Moses allowed him to have what he needed to be able to develop into a faithful man. And I think that's what the writer of Hebrews is going toward here. Moses was faithful by faith. Moses, when he was born, was hidden. He was hidden by his parents out of faithfulness, knowing that God would watch over them, that God would make sure that their baby was taken care of, that he would survive, that he would be well fed, that he would be saved from the king's edict. You know, I try and think about this, and of course, just having a newborn baby girl kind of lets me think about, you know, what would a mother really do? You know, I can't imagine my wife deciding that in order to save our child, that she needed to be put into a wicker basket out into the river. I just don't comprehend that. I'm not sure many of you probably would as well. If you think about what it took for Jochebed to say, hey, this is what I've got to do to this baby in order to save my baby, maybe if that's what you had to do, you would have done it. But can you imagine the faith that it took for that mother to lay that basket in the water? You know, the faith in God, the faith in salvation, the faith that he would be cared for. I believe that shows an astounding and a resounding faithfulness on the part of the parents, that they had to have had a confidence that that child would be taken care of, not just by some other person, but that that child would be taken care of by God. And I think that it shows to us that Jochebed, like many others, other mothers that we know today, had to have been a wonderful example to her son. We don't know exactly, as I said, kind of starting off the lesson, trying to go back over to some things as to what was said in the Bible about how long he stayed with Jochebed. We don't really know the amount of time he stayed there. Theoretically, it was the time that he needed to be weaned. And at that point, whenever he was kind of turned over to Pharaoh and grew up in Pharaoh's house. But regardless, if it was 3 months or 3 years, that child received an instruction at that home that could not be compromised, and nothing could be compared to it. You know, most people say within the first 3 months of living, especially the first 3 years, but the first 3 months helps set a pattern and an example for the many years to come. And I think that we see that in Moses' life here as he lived at home. David. It was. Yeah, David's point is that her faith was rewarded, because who was the one who was chosen to be the nurse? It was Jochebed. And her faith was rewarded, I think. And not just that, but that Moses was cared for. Moses was taken care of. And you see, I think here is that Moses had this wonderful foundation that we see from the Scripture. We don't have a huge amount of details, but as you read the passages of Scripture that deal with Moses, and especially that deal with his parents, you can't help but have this feeling, have this thought, that his parents knew who God was. And because they knew who God was, they would have instilled that into their children. Because you look at who their children were. Moses and Aaron and Miriam. Really, but Moses and Aaron, of course, were two of the greatest leaders of all of Israeli history. And we see in them, it had to have began somewhere. I don't think it's something that you necessarily just pick up on your own. Now, I believe you can learn a lot on your own, but I believe that it takes that firm foundation to help begin all those things. So Moses here is lauded, and I believe his parents are lauded in verse 23 of Hebrews 11 because of the faith that they've shown there in the midst of trouble and of strife and of problems that came to them because of Pharaoh and his edict. Secondly, in verse 24, it says, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. It is as though Moses, as he grew and as he matured, was able to develop that proper perspective of life. You know, imagine what Moses grew up around. He grew up in the land of Egypt among Pharaoh, the leader of arguably probably the greatest nation at that time in all of the known world. You know, Egypt was a land with unlimited riches, unlimited power. You know, it is a land that consumed so many different things that's what Moses had at his fingertips. And as being as Pharaoh's son, or Pharaoh's daughter's son, he would have had access to all those many, many things. In fact, as you look at as Stephen preached his sermon in Acts chapter 7, it mentions there that he was raised, that he grew up in Pharaoh's palace there, and he had all the power at his fingertips. That's what Moses had at his disposal, but yet Moses, as he grew up, chose instead to be counted among the Israelites instead of among the Egyptians. We are all faced with choices in life. And Moses here, when he was faced with this choice in life, he instead took a step toward faithful submission to God and being part of the righteous people instead of being counted among those who may have enjoyed life on earth, may have had endless riches and treasures here on earth, but had no idea or concept about who God was or what he would do for them. See, Moses instead chose, it says here, to be counted among the people of God instead of the people of the world. I believe it took some maturity for Moses. If you look in Hebrews 11:24, the beginning phrase thereafter, by faith Moses, it says, when he had grown up, when he had grown up. And what we see is that there was a maturation process here that had to have taken place. But Moses didn't get this overnight. He didn't just totally just snap, when he was 2 years old, realize, hey, I'm not an Egyptian. I don't want to be an Egyptian. I want to be an Israelite. I want to be part of the chosen people of God. Moses had to have learned this throughout his life. I believe it started when he was younger. I hardly believe that. But it took him until he grew up to make that firm conviction and that firm stand in his life. It took many years, possibly, of studying, of interacting with the people of Israel, of learning from the people of Israel, to be able to understand and to make that firm conviction, to make that choice to go to Israelites' camp instead of Pharaoh's. So I think that's an important factor here, is that Moses learned as he grew up. Carol. He was, it's very interesting, the way you can think about Moses' life is split up into 40s, okay? You can split up into 40 years period. He was approximately 40 years old whenever he went, when he left Egypt the first time, okay? He was 40 years old when he left Egypt. He was 80 years old when he came back from Egypt. So theoretically, he was around 80 years old whenever God spoke to him in that burning bush. And then he wandered with the people of Israel for 40 years. So he died when he was 120. He did. He did, but I really think he knew that. He knew about his people before he left Egypt. So I think those first 40 years is what helped him mature into that. Right. Exactly. That's true. That's true. And you're very right, yeah. You're very right. And that's the point that I tried to make as well, is the fact that it started when he was young. But I don't think it fully vested, so to speak, until he was about 40. But when he finally made that firm decision that I'm not going to be part of these people anymore, in fact, he's going to kill them instead, and that's what he did. He killed that Egyptian that was beaten up on the Israelite. And so, he came to his rescue. He came to help save him. I think at that point, Moses had already considered himself as possibly someone who was going to stand up against Egypt, but it's kind of like the Israelite people didn't want him. And in fact, kind of turned their backs on him. That's when I think he fled. But yeah, that's about 40 years is about the time period whenever he left, and then 80 years when he came back. So he had 40 years of even after he left to contemplate and to think about things and to work hard and to study and probably learn more from his father-in-law, Jethro. I'm not sure exactly how grounded he was in all the scriptures in the Old Testament, being a priest of Midian. But theoretically, he gives good advice later on down the road. So Jethro seemed to be pretty well-founded. But I think it was a continual process. But I think at the age of 40, he knew whose camp he was going to be pitching his tent in. And at that point in time, whenever he decided that he wanted to be called an Israelite instead of Pharaoh's daughter's son. And he kind of, went that way with regard to it. But, as I said, his appreciation had to have started many, many years before that burning bush. You know, it was something that had happened with regard probably to education. You know, as I said before, he had at his fingertips probably volumes of materials there in the Egyptian libraries. Those things that many other people may not have had access to. He also had access to the very Israelite nation, who they would have known the history of the people. Those patriarchs would have passed those things down from word of mouth, and they would have known the history of their people. They would have known that it was God who had promised them. So, but I really believe it's not until over in Exodus chapter 2, verse 11, when he killed the Egyptian, you know, his decision, of course, at that point was made very visible. Whenever he decided that he was going to kill the Egyptian because he was fighting and beating up the Israelite there in the camp. I think when he saw those unjust actions of the Egyptians, he finally realized the truth, the brutality of the Egyptians. He knew what Pharaoh was made of. He knew what Pharaoh would do. And in fact, as he fled, I think over in chapter 2, verses 14 through 15, it says Pharaoh there sought to kill Moses for the actions that he had taken. And I think it's important and interesting for us to understand here that Moses took a chance and really fled for his life. But in the end, he wasn't necessarily really fearful of his life. That's not what he was fearful of. It seems to me more in this case that he considered himself and considered it more important to make the choice to follow God instead of making that choice to live each and every day under Pharaoh's house instead. And that choice, that decision-making of Moses is what in fact caused him to, I think, be counted worthy here of this faithful adoration of God. And that's the fact that he made that choice between the riches of the earth, the temporal pleasures of sin, is the way Hebrews 11, 25 likes to talk about it, made a choice between that and trying to follow and be faithful unto God. And verse 26, I think, is very interesting because I'm not sure really that, of course, this is the Hebrew writer looking back, and it said, considering the reproach of Christ greater than riches than the treasures of all of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Comparing Moses there and fleeing Egypt to us in our Christian lives is what the Hebrew writer is almost doing here, telling us that it was Moses' mentality that giving up all those riches of Egypt were worth it all. Why? Because he was looking for the greater reward. I think in his mind it was following after God, not necessarily Christ coming and giving his life for us. I'm not sure how in-depth Moses understood the concept of the coming Savior. I think it was prophesied, don't get me wrong. I think that you look through the Old Testament, even in the Pentateuch back then when Moses wrote those books, it is talked about the coming, the plan of God that has been revealed to them, but how much and how eloquent had they understood that plan, I don't think we can really know. I don't think it was too in-depth, but we do know that Moses' decision here was based on a comparative analysis of looking at Egypt, what Egypt could provide, what Pharaoh could provide, and then what God could provide. And what we see is that when he looked and weighed these two things, he saw God's provisions, God's salvation, those things that God blesses us with are so much more important than those things that Pharaoh gives us. And that's the sacrifice and the decision and the choice that Moses made when he fled and went to Midian. Yeah. It does. Right. Yeah, he said it almost kind of speaks as Moses there as being a Christian in the way that the decision that he made here. I think the Hebrew writer's trying to, of course we know, I talked about this before we even began to study, is that the book of Hebrews is a huge comparison between old law and new law, and the Old Testament and New Testament. And this comparison kind of helps bring in, starts driving home the fact that the faithful of the Old Testament should be compared to the faithful of the New Testament. And the fact that we got to make that decision ourselves as well. Hebrews 11:25 is often quoted, especially to teenagers. I see it all the time when they talk about, you know, the passing pleasures of sin. You know, and to try and not look at the temporal, but look at the eternal consequences. And I think that's what Moses had done.
John, we've got to keep in mind, too, that all of this was being done by faith.
You're right. That's true. That's very a good point. And what Wayne's saying is that he did this in faith just like we do it in faith. You know, he didn't see Christ any more than we saw Christ. You know, we didn't see Christ as well. I think it's interesting. He's before Christ, and now we're after Christ. But you think about the similarities, it's unavoidable. You know, we live, we walk, we do things by faith. And much like these people, as we see here, verses 39 and 40 of the last part of chapter 11, which we may never get to in our study, but it says there, and all these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive that what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect. And the bottom line is that they had not seen those things, but yet they lived their lives in faith, just like us. Now, we can enjoy the pleasures. We can enjoy the blessings from that sacrifice that has come, from those that blessing of Christ. But yet, you're right. We still walk and live by faith each and every day. And those things that we do because we haven't seen them. We have to have faith that they actually did exist. No. He did. Correct. And it's the same bloodline in some ways. If you really think about it, what her point is that it was the sacrifice of Christ was for Moses as well as it was for us. And it was. It was for all of humanity. It was for all mankind, past, present, and future. And that sacrifice was given once for all. And the sacrifice given for Moses is something I think for us all to look at with admiration and be thankful in it. Real quickly, I want to see if I can get through the next one. I doubt I will be able to because it's actually one of my longer points. But we'll go ahead and get started anyways. But Moses, it says here, is lauded, was commended. It says in verse 27, by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. And it's kind of pigeon-tails and goes into the point that I just made here. When Moses fled, when Moses left Egypt, when he forsook all that he had known before in his life, he did that in faith. He did that not knowing where he was going to go, not knowing what was going to come about, not knowing if he would be saved. He feared Pharaoh. He feared the wrath of the king. However, it says here, he endured. He endured. Why? Because he saw him who was unseen. You see, he saw God for who God was. God was an almighty, all-powerful, all-knowing being. He knew and he understood that basic premise of who God is. And because of that, he was able to flee in faith from Egypt and not fear for his life. Moses was a man who was faithful, who led the people of Israel, who fled Egypt, who we see in all facets of his life as someone who looked to God for guidance. He looked to God for that safety and security. He looked to God as being the one who would sustain him. And this point and this premise here is not just a fact, I don't think, about leaving Egypt. I think being faithful and leaving Egypt is a very important part of who Moses was and who Moses really ultimately became. You know, those 40 years of being away from Egypt made Moses who he was, I believe. It gave him that grounding of having a family. It gave him that encouragement and even more further of a building on that foundation of being someone who looked to God for guidance. When you look at the narrative of the burning bush, you see there that it is something that instilled within Moses even further the concept that God was holy and that all that he did should be following after that premise. And so Moses, we see here as leaving Egypt, isn't just the fact that he left Egypt, but it's what he gathered and what he gained when he left Egypt that really truly mattered. We'll pick up here next week.